Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio. Y'all turn to that station.
It's time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings at this time, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger, editor and publisher of The Timberjay, a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Hi, Marshall. Thanks for being here.
Well, happy to be here, Heidi.
Well, we talk COVID a lot, but, you know, it's still going on. We're in a pandemic, and it's good to kind of know where we are at as a state. What have you been reporting on when it comes to COVID?
Yeah, well, we reported on the latest press briefing, the weekly Tuesday press conference that the Department of Health puts on. And the good news is, and there is a fair bit of good news, I mean, the rates of new infections in Minnesota have dropped a lot. In fact, as of Tuesday, the state was reporting 727 new cases in Minnesota, and that's the lowest level in a long time. You know, remember back in November, we were seeing daily new cases running from anywhere from 5,000 to 8,000or more. You know, so that's down to 727. That's a big improvement, and it's a trend that has certainly been seen in our area as well. I mean, we were reporting, you know, dozens of new cases every week up in our neck of the woods, and that's really calmed down a lot. We're just seeing really a very small handful. So that's the good news. Flies in the ointment, I guess, would be that the vaccine rollout so far has been relatively slow, and so that has left state health officials still concerned. And at the same time, they are seeing an increase in the number of cases of COVID here in Minnesota that are of the UK, that would be the United Kingdom, or the Brazilian variant. And those are two variants of the coronavirus, which have been identified in recent weeks. And they are believed to be much more contagious than the original variant. And they don't think they're any more deadly, but just they appear to be easier to catch. And so that's clearly a concern. While the numbers look good right now, the state health officials are concerned that if we don't get the rollout of the vaccine ramped up here very soon, that we could see another spike if these new variants start becoming we start seeing community spread of these new variants, and so that's the concern right now. So overall, they're feeling pretty good, but they realize that it's going to be a long time yet before, you know, we're out of the woods here. I mean, it's going to take months to roll out the vaccine to a large enough percentage of the population to really, make a difference, to build up that herd immunity. So, they're still recommending very much that people continue to follow all of the COVID prevention protocols that they've been talking about for a while. It's wearing your masks, social distancing. The fact that they really pushed this, starting back in November when we saw the big spike and then had the partial shutdown of, some facilities, it did seem to make a difference. They were very concerned that after Christmas and New Year's that we were going to see a big second spike, and it didn't happen. And so apparently Minnesota did get the message, and as a result of that, we didn't see much of a spike after the holidays. And so far, things seem to be relatively contained, at least for now.
Yeah. Patience is always the thing we all need and don't always have when it comes to the vaccine, and then the time it's going to take till things completely level out. So, and the variant was are expected in things like a virus, right? That there will be changes. That's kind of the job of a virus in some ways, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, just like the flu, every year there's a different version of it that comes out. And we're probably going to have you know, we'll have the COVID vaccine, I mean, the COVID virus around for a long time, and it probably will mutate, you know, periodically. And hopefully that, you know, once people have immunity, it won't catch, you know, take hold in the community and start to become, you know, a pandemic again, even if we do see variation. So, I mean, it's like the flu, you know, it hopefully will become like the flu where, yeah. It's less, deadly and, less contagious than what's been so far.
That's right. Well, let's get an update on Congressman Pete Stauber. How are things going for him when it comes to his opposition to President Biden's Department of Interior Secretary that he wants to nominate?
Right. Well, it does not appear that his effort to derail the nomination of Deb Haaland as Interior Secretary has caught much fire, at least in the U.S. House. He had, as we reported last week, he had taken quite a bit of fire from Native American tribes in Minnesota and around the country for opposing Haaland's nomination. Haaland would be the first Native American appointed to a presidential cabinet position. And I think that the position of Interior Secretary is particularly important to tribes, given that the Interior Secretary does, you know, have a lot of overlap and oversight over, you know, federal lands, including Indian lands. So they certainly, it's an important position to tribes, you know, in the U.S. So there was a lot of interest and excitement, I think, among tribes, you know, in this nomination. And so Representative Stauber came out in kind of leading an opposition effort, there was quite a bit of anger directed at him. And it's interesting. I mean, you know, he circulated a letter which was directed to President Biden and, you know, asking him to withdraw the nomination. He had circulated that among, you know, House members. And he only received 15 total signatures, including his own. And he was unable to get a single member of the Minnesota congressional delegation to sign on, which that's kind of a blow. And I suspect that some of the other members of the Minnesota delegation didn't really want to face, you know, the kind of criticism that Stauber had been facing as a result of his efforts here. And so it looks at this point, I mean, it's hard to say how influential a letter from, you know, a handful of House members is going to be with the administration. I suspect it'll have very little impact. And besides, the decision-making takes place in the Senate, of course. That's where they review and must approve these nominations. At this point, there's no scheduled hearings with the Energy and Natural Resources Committee in the Senate, which would be the first body to hear, you know, to have hearings on that nomination. I will say, however, that you know, that committee is overseen by the Joe Manchin, who comes from West Virginia, obviously a coal state, and also Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, and of course she's very closely tied with the oil industry there. So there certainly will be, I'm sure there will be some questions of Haaland and her position on federal leasing of oil and gas land. So, you know, she could face some questioning, but, you know, given the situation in the Senate right now, it's likely that she's probably going to be approved. So, but, you know, time will tell.
Yes. So far, all that approval process has gone smoothly, hasn't it?
It has. Yep. Yeah, for sure.
And then she is currently a congresswoman, right? So if that all passes, then there'll be a special election or appointed from New Mexico. So there'll be someone new there, right?
Right, yep.
Okay. Interesting stuff to see how this goes. Marshall, let's move on to a story about fishers and what they're finding out. First, remind us, what is a fisher? What does it look like?
Well, a fisher looks... Well, it's the largest member of the weasel family that is commonly found in Minnesota. I mean, the largest member is the wolverine. There may be a few sporadic wolverines around Minnesota, but they're not, it's not clear that there are any. So, you know, the next largest would be the fisher. And it's a good-sized fisher, and they vary quite a bit. The males are quite a bit larger than the females, but a typical male fisher might be, you know, a couple feet long, and then they have a long, bushy tail as well. And, they're an aggressive predator. They feed on things like, anything they can catch, really. And that would be, red squirrels, hares, anything they can catch. And they also feed on carrion as well. There's been concern from the DNR for a while about the fisher population, and they have been declining in numbers. And the reason that they can tell that, I mean, there's a number of ways, but one of the best ways is just the number of pelts that are registered. And we always check in every year when the DNR does its annual pelt registrations, which they did last week, this month, I should say. And, the numbers of fisher pelts have been declining steadily. And this year was the lowest number of fisher pelts registered in over 20 years, and down to just 35 pelts, which is pretty limited. And the issue appears to be, based on research that's been done by the DNR, is that the fisher may be losing their denning sites. Based on research done by John Erb, a wildlife biologist, fisher use cavities in aspen. It's about 75% of their nesting sites are found in large aspen cavities. Well, the problem is the fisher's fairly big, so it has to be a big tree in order for them to be able to utilize a cavity. So the fact that that we're seeing a big decline in the amount of a big old aspen on the landscape appears to be a factor. And I talked to Tom Rush, he's a DNR wildlife manager out of Tower this week. And, he said, they've tried to reduce the length of the season. They've reduced the bag limit on fisher, hoping that they would see bounce back in the population, and they haven't seen it. And he said, that indicates that the problem really is a habitat issue. So, they're concerned about the trend of losing denning sites for fisher. And also, given the fact that the DNR has been kind of shortening the rotation for a lot of its timber management, that may prevent the development of the larger, older aspen in the future. So that could, continue to create problems for that species. Now, the other slightly smaller member of the weasel family that also is hotly sought for pelts are the pine marten. And they have been doing a little bit better. Their population is more stable. And according to Rush, that may very well be because they can make use of smaller densites. It's a smaller animal, and they often use like white cedar, holes in cedar, or they can even use burrows. So they have a little more, variability in terms of their denning opportunities, and so they seem to not be suffering the kind of habitat degradation that we're seeing for the fisher.
That's Marshall Helmberger. This has been the Border News Roundup. You can read and see more at timberjay.com. You can sign up for a subscription either through the mail or online there as well to support local media. Marshall, have a great weekend. You'll be outside, I'm guessing.
For sure.
Yeah, it's a great time. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Thanks.